Good morning. It's me. Can you hear me?
You're listening to Nighttime Daydreams with DJ Kalan K on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on and then tune in and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more, and more, and more, and more, and more.
Hi, this meeting is being live streamed. I got it. This is a reading of some work from the Cynical magazine from April of this year, which is actually like the most recent issue fresh off the presses, because the Cynical tends to run at a different rate of time than most of the universe. My friend Raymond Sollard publishes it, and I'm going to read some of the dream raps that he's written in it, which is a recurrent type of literature that he puts out in here. So without further ado, or without much ado at all, first one is called "It Was the One Story He Had to Tell." A young man told me this story like it was the one story he had to tell. Like for him, it was the one story of the world. He said he first saw her in the Ancien coffee house, passing him to elsewhere. He could never figure out whither. There was an antique Wright typer there on a corner table in a shadow. Many days he would sit in an old green armchair in that same shadow with his thick books, looking for any passing, obscure, or even slight reference to the unitive time, or to the end of the world, or to the beach of many worlds, and how they once braided closer, typing and typing what he found. Whoever he had been before he came here, it was what he did now. He sometimes lived with the creatures in the white woods further deep in the Ancien coffee house. When he came, they would make sure he was fed of fruit and nuts. Often, when he despaired, they would share their special rutabaggy soup with him. It would calm him down for a stretch. Never saw her, though. Most days, he would doze in his old green armchair. Everyone knew it was his place. It was always left empty when he was further deep visiting the creatures. Aunt or aunt made sure of it until she no longer had to do so, it being so well known by all. Occasionally, his hard studies deep in his thick books would be comforted by the sounds of guitar from another room, one closer to the entrance. One drifting afternoon, he took a curious look and saw it was a handsome old man sitting in an old armchair too, eyes closed, strumming, a tall, missorted pile of pages on the small table next to him. Then one day he came upon a note in that antique Wright typer. It was a soft sheet of paper decorated with creatures like his own friends, white bunny, gray hedgety hog, many kinds of bears, and so on. But what was typed there was not in his own tongue, and he could not understand this because the keys of the antique Wright typer were in his language. He just stared and stared at these strange symbols, trying to get a feel for them by how they marked that soft page. He somehow knew it was from her, his wished-for beloved. She had typed this note to him. It was her way of saying hello, that she'd noticed him noticing her passing to elsewhere. Further deep with the creatures in the white woods that night, clustered with many beneath a warm bear blanket, near a clearing of full moonlight. In his dream, she was with him on a strange bus. She was at the front, he was at the back, and the bus was traveling through these same white woods. It was the one with no roof you may have heard tell of, especially if your travels have taken you through Elliptical City. Riding along, he became distracted into his deep studies, especially by a book called Power, one he would only find in rare dreams. He suddenly looked up and she was gone, but then he noticed there remained a lavender trace of her in the air. He followed the lavender trace, ever nearing her without arriving. And he woke up from this dream and realized that his pursuit of her now went on by waking and dreaming. He studied the soft note in the antique Wright typer, ratcheted it down to a blank line. He typed the following words. These were not wise wisdoms he typed, but they were a start. They were something he was fairly sure of. The road on, usually better. The road back, not so good. And then he sat back down in his old armchair and he opened up his book again. And he continued his study and his search for many answers. So this is, again, Dream Wraps by Raymond Sollard from The Cenacle Magazine. If you're just joining us now, if there isn't us, if it's not just me talking to my image in Zoom. The next piece is called The Road On, Usually Better. The one after that is called They Eat the Streets. So The Road On, Usually Better. The road on, usually better. The road back, not so good. Was it the lavender trace of her, his wished for beloved, come now even to him in waking, that led him out of the Ancien coffee house, carrying to her soft note he had taken from the antique Wright typer on the table next to his armchair? Was it the lavender trace that led him out of the epic and long and strange and murky and odd and beautiful Ancien coffee house? Outside, after so long not, he went onto the street of the village. Nearby was a diner. Had he been there before? None of this was familiar, but it looked friendly. He climbed the stairs up to the diner. It looked kind of like a silver-streaked railroad car of some antique vintage. Walked slowly through the door, saw there were booths going way back. But in a near corner, there's a tall, round table, tall chairs, and for some reason he sat down there with his note. Did the lavender trace nudge him over to it? Maybe. Sat down with the note. The place was lively, people at every booth. A white-faced Pink Cat radio quietly blared a recent song by the Pink Floyd. You're listening to Spirit Plants Radio, America. At one of the closer booths, there's a couple of truck drivers in their uniforms. Bit grizzled, but okay. Clear on. Having their morning coffees, their eggs. A few booths further away, there's a colorful 3-0. Two men in tuxedos, one bald as the day, the other hair tall as the night. A woman in a strange gown, elegant, old-fashioned, inapproachable, yet somehow naked, too. Further back, he saw a strange bent man showing some kind of long-legged apparatus to someone who seemed to have, in turn, to show a nifty little camera. And he looked at his soft note from her, trying to make of it what he could. He wrote with his small pencil with a pink eraser on top, below her unknowable words, below his typed words, in small script. Build a great big poem, a great big poem of many little poems. Bricks and bricks and bricks of poems. Build them up into a great building. Welcome, all. You gonna have your regular, son? The owner cried over him with a leering smile. He gestured to a waitress to come on over and get his order pronto. The next piece is called They Eats the Streets. Looking around this diner, he began to wonder if maybe it's more of a bar and a grill. Then he noticed the sign that someone made mounted behind the counter. Six Stars Bar and Grill. It still looked like a diner to him, but maybe it's something that used to be a diner. Maybe it's both. He nodded to the friendly waitress, or possibly barmaid, and said, "Yes, I'll have my usual." Looked at me. intently listening to his only story. But I'll tell you a secret, I didn't have a usual there. I didn't think that they knew who I really was, but I did think that they had confused me with someone else. So he looked around stealthily and noticed there's a sign for the restroom in the corner. He made his way over there. There's two restrooms, actually, each marked restroom. All right. He entered one of them, and there's two sinks. No, three. One didn't look like it was working. The other, on each side of it, was. And there was a man there, and he was studying his face closely. Didn't notice me at all. He went to that other one that was working, studied the cuts on his face, used a paper towel to dab at them. Who do they think I am? Who am I? I mean, when I was a kid, I used to be the catcher. Then the man, his hair long, his beard longer, and his overcoat even longer than that, started saying into the mirror, very slowly, almost chanting. We turn the page and we'll find out what the man is saying, very slowly, almost chanting. We came down the street, then they ate the street, and the street was gone. We came down the street, then they ate the street, and the street was gone. We came down the street. And so on. He was deep into it, whatever it meant to him. Finally, he gathered up his shambles to leave, holding preciously to some kind of little stick in his dirty hands. Gave his face a good wash, despite its cuts and bruises and contusions and so on, and come back out into the Bar and Grill diner, returned to his seat. And there's my meal, one egg, one sausage, one strip of bacon, half piece of toast, a little touch of butter on it, glass of orange juice, small glass, only a quarter of the way full, tall glass of milk, and a shot glass is something so dark I can't even see through it. He nodded at the waitress barmaid. Thank you, Si. She laughed. Her turquoise eyes twinkled, nearly the same color as those of his wished-for beloveds. Her hair in a long, pretty braid, too. No lavender trace, though. But how did he know that her favorite author was Stephen King? How did I know that, he asks me. I shrug unhelpfully. On the white-faced pink cat radio behind the counter, someone was droning on about the end of the world and the group responsible. Well, they're sitting on top of their bus. Looks like it has some kind of makeshift roof right now. And there's a standoff. And there's a charismatic leader standing on top of the bus, waving his arms. The reporter doesn't know what will happen next. Now there's a James Gunn classic on Spirit Plants Radio America. Next piece is called We're Sitting on Top of the Bus. We're sitting on top of our bus. It's peaceful. About a bajillion stars up there in those starry skies. We have these old lawn chairs that we keep tied under the bus, kept special for nights like this when we drag them out, haul them up, get our fake roof in place, and set them down on top of it. Now, admittedly, we're surrounded by cops and probably an army, and who knows who others. Been accused of bringing about the end of the world. Well, you could say that. I mean, the world ends every day for someone, for many someones, in different kinds of ways. Well, people die. Well, people move, change jobs, gain and lose lovers, discover their favorite book for the rest of their years. Pain, joy. Oh, it's always ending and beginning. End of the world? Well, we know, sitting up here on top of our bus in our old lawn chairs, that it began with a strange girl that we encountered many months and miles ago in the small handmade book that she gave us. She didn't give it to one of us. No, she gave it to all of us. We were at a festival, met a lot of nice people there, shared a lot of soup. Seemed like she was there and gone before anybody knew, but here we were with this small handmade book tied up with a braided green and gold ribbon, knotted with a pretty little stone. We waited till we left the festival, till we were out in the middle of elsewhere, sitting in these old lawn chairs on top of this bus, our home, looking up at these bajillion stars. And then we chose to undo the green and gold ribbon and to look at the pages inside. And yes, that is where tonight began. All of it, every little bit, when we read these pages. I can't even say we read them all at once. I can't even say we were able to read one page at a go. And this was a small book. Look at your hand. It was about the size of your hand, especially if your hand is not that big. It didn't explain itself right away. All it said on the first page was, dreams within dreams within dreams. That's it, and a kind of odd curlicue handwriting. One of us remarked that it seemed like that handwriting was by someone who was not familiar with handwriting, as though they were imitating how to do it. And the next page, all it said was, endless levels, up and down. That was it. And we read more as time went on. It's funny because we always read it together. We'd pull out all our old lawn chairs on top of that bus, set them in a kind of a circle. We took turns reading. Everyone was silent, listening. Turned to the third page and it said, dreams of power, unitive, to sing and heal. And I'll tell you that the book felt like more than a book. It had like an inner glow, an inner Sometimes it seemed like the even cackled quietly. Weird. It was like it was alive, but in some way that was its own. It was not inert, not at all. Tonight, we're going to read the last page. We've agreed. It's time to read that last page and see if what all really has happened so far, as dire as it seems, cops and the army and who knows who others even, might have some good or magical or unknown end. So if you've just tuned in, this is Nathan Horowitz reading from the Cynical Magazine. Text's called Dream Raps by Raymond Sullard. This piece is called I Gotta Leave the Bus. I gotta leave the bus. I gotta leave. I gotta leave. I gotta leave the bus. You know what I mean, man? Hang around enough strange people over the course of a long, strange time, you start to lose yourself into the strangeness. Start to not to know the difference between you and that strangeness. All that unitive time and end of the world crap. I know there are cops, armies, whatever, surrounding the bus. And so I wait until it's the darkest part of that night. I slip out, go out the back, the emergency exit door never locked, slither on down under the bus. I don't even take the chance of saying goodbye to my friend with the nifty little camera. Remember the nifty little camera from a couple of days back? I can't say for sure how someone doesn't spot me with all their radars and sonars and whatever ours, but somehow I get under that bus, and the bus is parked in a big weeds patch, man. Now, I'm not the most mystical, flicked-out dude you could ever possibly meet on your way. I keep pretty far from those freaky white woods and the wild stories of talking bunnies and whatnot in there. But I swear, as soon as I'm among these weeds, I feel safe, safer than I felt in a long time. I don't say a thing to them. Yeah, I know you're thinking, you don't say a thing to weeds? But yes, I don't say a thing to the weeds, but they're there, man. They're with me. They understand my distress. They feel it. And I want to say something, some kind of thing, some kind of thank you. So I've never done this before, but what I do next is I put my arm right up against my mouth with just a little breath of space so that whatever I say is not going to travel beyond just a few inches from me. And I say, I need to get out of here. Can you give me cover? And nothing happens. Yeah, I'm an idiot. But then it's like, I hear this beautiful music that I can't account for. Is it in my head? Is it out there? I don't know. It's like the weeds are breathing music to help me. No words. But I start to move fast, and I feel everything around me moving with me. I feel like wherever I'm moving, there's cover around me. There's silence. Everything is closer to me somehow, keeping me upright, hurrying me along, warming me within. I keep moving and moving until I'm 50 fields beyond all that, if that's possible. And that's how I got away. It was those weeds. You don't need to believe me. I don't need to believe me, but that's how it happened. Just saying, that is how it happened. The next dream rap by Raymond Solar Jr. is called The House with the Attic from the Dreams of My Youth. So what happens as I leave the weeds and their kind aid to my escape is that I carry on for many more fields, still worrying that I'm being followed. But then I see that old house in the distance, and I'm sure that it's the house with the attic from the dreams of my youth. I went to that old house many times, hundreds of times, over and over in dreams. I make for that old house like a lunatic, running with my arms waving, flapping about me, and my legs doing almost as badly, but I keep going and I don't trip. I almost trip a couple times, but I don't trip. I make it to the front door finally, convinced it'll be locked or someone will prevent me, but nobody does. The front door is not even all the way closed. I enter into the sky-tall vestibule, and it's dusty and cobwebby. And I guess I get a little bit of a worried feeling about it, but I keep moving, looking. And again, I travel through the countless rooms filled with old furniture and strange bookcases, and odd statues and weird paintings and mirrors that showed other dimensions and so on. Room after room, some are huge as miles, some I can barely make through crawling, inching my way in and around. Up many flights of stairs until finally I come to the top of them and there's the button hanging in midair attached to a fishing line. Tug down and a ladder unfolds from the ceiling. Climb up and arrive in my beloved old attic. Oh, blessed be, I make it to the attic. It had no width. It had no height. It had no length. It had no number. I'd traveled it ever on back then, and there was no end. And there was no end to traveling it. It was like traveling one's own mind and finding no walls, no closed doors, no locks, no barriers, nothing. Feels that it always, as it always felt, rooms of content, structures of content, scaffoldings of content, some built, some building, some pending in plans. This is it. I've arrived. I'm in the attic. I wish you were here too, wished for, beloved. I would share it with you. I promise you I would. Would you like to come to the attic with me? I think you might. I think you would enjoy it. There's a trace of you here from the coffee house. I sniff like creatures and can swear sometimes. It's here. I'm not walking anymore. No need to walk here. No need to hurry here. Go slow and enjoy. Come with me. It's okay. Lift up or just let go. Now you can see round corners through walls. You hear with no end. There's no limit to your hearing. Everything has sense, and you sense them all, and everything touches you close and closer. Everything braids closer, symbiosis. That's the word I heard once, and that's the word. Symbiosis, a language for all, from all, by all. Here we go. Here come the woods. I'd say hang on. But don't hang on. Let go. Let go. Feel the trees. Feel the leaves, the branches, the air, the soil. Feel it all. You feel it, don't you? The attic. You've made it. I'm so glad you're here with me. Let's go. Remember me. Next piece is called The Blues Guitarist I Knew Somewhat Years Ago. As I wander through the many countless rooms of the attic, I find myself in company with the blues guitarist I knew somewhat years ago. Well, I knew him during his last days and his killing addiction. I remember that his best friend, the photographer, couldn't help him, just couldn't. And his beloved told me I needed to help him. And I tried. All I could see was that when he played his guitar, he was safe. He was safe and he was happy. And what was killing him was nowhere close. So that's what I did. I'd see him often as I could, and he'd play his blues guitar for me for hours on end. We'd get so high, sometimes with the weeds, always with the music. Ha! Now he's walking beside me, and I see he's got his blues guitar slung round his back. We smile at each other. I nod to him the way I did back then, and he knows what that means. It means, get that guitar between your two paws and strum, man, strum. And he does. Ha! Blues songs he wrote about the end of the world, back when his wasn't so close to ending. I loved them songs so much, and wondered if one day one of them would end up on Spirit Plants Radio America. Seemed possible back then. The attic is very wooden, this part of it anyway, this long hallway we're in. Dark wooden, yet glowing. I see we're both barefoot, whatever that means. We're both dressed in jeans and colorful shirts. My hair is long, his hair is long. He's playing and playing and playing. Ha! I start to shout, I start to clap. I can't sing, I can't play, but I can join in other ways, just making noise and shouting to keep him playing on. Ha! I guess at some point I'm not walking with him anymore, but I feel like I understand something better about time. Too much is strange, too much occurs, too much is remembered by only a few or one. Time is not a unitive block of lead going forward and backwards forever. Ha! Time is that blues guitar, keeping it all at bay, clapping, shouting, carry on, carrying on, long as he can play. Ha!
1, 2, 3, 4, roll, ear, boost, nope. Hey,
good morning, it's me, can you hear me?
You're listening to Nighttime Daydreams with DJ Koan K on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, turn on, and then you tune in. And visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more, and more, and more.
Next piece is called This Is What I Learned That You Should Know Now. And again, I'm reading Raymond Sollard from The Cynical Magazine, number 115, April 2021, the 26th anniversary issue. Raymond Sollard, Dream Raps. This is what I learned that you should know. I reached what seemed like the far end of the attic, which I'd been walking in for a long time. Maybe it started from dreamland, I'm not sure. Who knows how these things really start? Does it matter? But I want you to know what I found out when I seemed to have reached the end of the attic. I look at a wall before me, not really convinced it was a wall before me. I'd never seen such a wall before me here in this attic, in which I'd been many times. But it compelled me to look down, and it compelled me to kneel down, and it compelled me to lie down. I kept going down and down and down, and realizing that it was just a different kind of up and up and up. And I was taught something because I was willing to go down and down and down and up and up and up before this wall that I didn't believe was really there, though there it stood. But this is what I learned that you should know now. There are these far too tiny to see sort of artists, tiniest little creatures who paint the world with emotions, each one a different kind, sadness, anger, fear, joy, and so on. And they do not know of us, nor we of them. And yet we interrelate and matter much to each other. We braid together without knowing. They bore your trace, beloved. And why did they show me now? Why did I get to see? Why did they encourage me to share with you? I think it's because these artists were feeling like they weren't doing well enough by us, and they wanted to do better. And they had not known previous of us, just as we had not known previous of them. But then came this wall that brought us together. For them, there was no end of the world. And they learned of me, and I learned of them. They reached up to me with jewels of love, touching me as they could, feeling me. They were asking, how can we do better with what we do? How can we help? Down and down and down and up and up and up. This next piece is called Spirit Plants Radio America. I push through that wall that may not be there, and I invite my little friends to come along, and they do. They hop into a pocket in my green plaid jacket, through the wall, and come to a studio of a radio station with a big sign across the wall that says in fancy, colorful script, Spirit Plants Radio America. I peek out the window nearby and see a lovely campus out there. There's a further room where I see radio folks hanging out. Ceiling looks like a roof of endless stars. Some of them look like students, some don't. I scurry into a corner as the DJ nods to me. And the engineer nods to me too. And I get the feeling that if you're going to DJ your show, you've got to engineer someone else's show. Hold hands both ways. I become aware that I too DJ a show on the station, Spirit Plants Radio America, but I do it remotely. I don't know if everybody likes me doing it remotely, but my show has been long on the air there, and everyone is friendly overall there. It's nice to be part of things. I let my little friends out for a look around. They seem drawn to people for different reasons. One DJ is sad, worried, something, and one of my little artist friends hurries right over to her, a couple of swabs of the old molecular-sized brush, and she cheers up a little. Looks around outside of her own struggles and sees that she's not alone. Another DJ is angry, watching the television. On it, the asshole who is in charge, letting more and more people get hurt needlessly. Another of my little friends hurries over to him, paints him with calm, calm, calm. I give a small signal. It's time to leave Spirit Plants Radio America. Leave the ones who think I'm a good DJ and the ones who think I'm not. It's time for me and my little friends to move along. I give a wave to all my fellow DJs, hoping to return sometime, and we're all on our way again. Next piece is called I Show My Little Friends a Bookstore. I feel like I want to show my little friends something good. There's more than idiots and suffering way up here. We come to an escalator and hop on, my little friends, safe into the pocket of my green plaid jacket. We go up and up and up and down and down and down and arrive to a wonderful library with about a bajillion books around us. I gesture to my little friends to come out of my pocket and hop up onto my hand, and they do. I show them big books with beautiful pictures and tiny books with a tiny few of the best words and oddly shaped books that are funny and quiet, hidden books no noisier than a shadow. Walk all around this wonderful library until we come to the very end and there's a door, green and gold. Those colors are lucky. We walk in, wondering. It's a bare room. It's a white room. It's a kind of room that could be anything in the world, from unitive to ending. It contains all the colors and all the worlds of possibility. I start to walk faster until I realize I'm walking alongside of a stream, like it was back in the coffee house. White woods all around, glowing. Come to a bridge. There's an area under the bridge, stones, a hill. I sit there with all my little friends, watch the water go by. They're sitting next to me in their tiny tininess, fingers on chin, trying to figure all this out. I'm with them, finger on my chin, trying to figure it all out as well, with you, beloved. Some illustration here of some white woods. Next piece is called There's Some Stories You Need to Tell Slowly. And if you're just joining us, this is The Cynical Magazine and Dream Wraps by Raymond Sollard with There's Some Stories You Need to Tell Slowly. There are some stories that you need to tell slowly. And in telling them slowly, they will be different kinds of stories than if you told them otherwise. You see, I don't feel like I'm in the attic anymore. This isn't the attic. This is my studio apartment in Zombie Town, and it's pretty bare. I haven't been here in a while. Is this the day I moved out all those years ago? I remember leaving just a little bit of trash in the corners and not giving proper departure notice. The landlord was an asshole, and he deserved it. But I'm back here now, and it's kind of emptiness I'm feeling. If I looked out the door, would I see that moving truck speeding away with me and my friends? But here it's a thin feeling, less than a memory. Not even a memory. Is there something here? It's just a bare room. But then I hear a noise, less than a noise. Maybe it's a small breath. But it draws me into the bathroom, and I go in, and I close the door. It's empty, too. I don't turn on the light. I'm in the dark. Oh, I've been trapped in here before. Long stretches of tripping, trapped in here. I can hear my white-faced pink cat radio in the other room. Used to keep it on all night to keep me company. The Pink Floyd playing, I think. I feel my way around, finding my sea legs in the darkness. Finally, I just use that old trick and just close my eyes, begin to go, Ah, here we go. There's a door in the back of this tiny bathroom that wasn't there back tripping when. Well, I pushed through and now I'm walking. My eyes closed, but nothing is happening yet. Now I'm coming somewhere. I'm definitely out of that dark bathroom, and now I'm in a cement hotel room. Not dissimilar to my studio, but definitely not my studio. It's empty as well. What can I do about this? I want something more to happen here than is happening so far. Am I telling this story slowly? enough. I walk through the door of the hotel room, and now abruptly outside. Across the street, there's a movie theater. Now we're getting somewhere. Nada Theater, of course. Remote land, nightly, midnight, of course. Now we're getting somewhere. I walk right into the theater. No one stalls me. No one is there. The theater is empty. What's weird is that I find that I don't have a shirt on now. I just kind of notice it. Maybe a kind of breeze caught me or something. So I'm standing here now in this empty theater, and it's not anywhere near midnight. And I sit in the second row. It's the right row. It's where I always sit, especially with you, beloved. A trace of you in here? I watch. I wait. I nod. And I, come on, screen, show me something. I'll talk a little faster then. Then I see a refuge in the white woods for many, bound on all sides by braided traps and alarums. And a culture in this refuge grows up that is happy, thrives. Till one time at a ball field, a pop fly soars over the bounds and many arguments over fair or foul. Fair or foul, what does that mean? What is happening here? Next time, I'm going to tell this story even more slowly. Next piece is called Whenever I Go Into the Nada Theater. If you're just joining us now, this is reading from the Cenacle. This is Nathan reading from the Cenacle, Raymond Szilard's work called Dream Raps. This is the 26th anniversary issue of the Cenacle, number 115, April 2021. This has a track record, ladies and gentlemen, and this is not the first series of dream raps here. This one is called Whenever I Go Into the Nada Theater. And speaking as a reader, I've been here before at least in different dream raps, but the Nada Theater and Remote Land and the Hovel and Zombie Town, et cetera. White Woods, creatures. Whenever I go into Nada Theater, I'm convinced that it is at least midnight. Now I know this makes no sense. After all, you can walk into a movie theater any time of the day or evening, but no, I walk through its strange doors and it is midnight or later. It is a vast movie theater. Its ceiling is very high, if there at all. It has balconies that seem to go up and back and up and back. And there are little side balconies too. I don't know if people sit in them or if they're just for decoration. And there seem to be pulsing images on the ceiling and walls and even on the floor, definitely on those green and gold curtains that open slowly to reveal a massive movie screen, a massive one. And yet I sit down there in the second row where I sit with you, and we look up toward that massive movie screen. I close my eyes for just a moment to enjoy it all. When I open up my eyes again, I won't say I'm in the movie. That would be a dream, strange dream and a good one, but no. But it does seem as though maybe the movie and I are less separate from each other now. Yes, that's the polite way to put it. As though this theater and I held the little branch and the stone jewel between us. You got to watch out who's in the audience, and you got to make sure that they understand too. The movie screen and I, the movie's world and I, share some space, let's say. And I get up to move around a little bit, and nothing seemed difficult to do, and the office I'm in is empty. There is a desk in the corner, of course, right over there, and that strange old computer on it. I sit down in a chair, which doesn't look very reliable, and I look at the screen, and it seems to be black and green. And the figures on it are hard to read. They're very pixely and rectangular. Now they're pulsing. And I'm thinking, okay, is this my job? Is this what I do now? Do I make spreadsheets? Do I build documents? Am I just back from vacation? I must just be back from vacation. That bus ride to the great city broke down 3 times. It was like a cult ran it. Wanted me to come up on that raggedy-looking roof to read some crazy girl's book about many worlds. Then they play the damn radio all night instead of fixing the tires quick. That's why there's so much work piled up in the infile on my left-hand side and no work completed in the outfile on my right-hand side. All right, all right, all right. I'll get down to work. Spreadsheets, documents, other things. I can do this. No, I can't do this. I'm not going to do this. I turn around. I look at the wall behind me. I look deep into the wall behind me. I'm going someplace else. I need some more vacation days before I can get down to this kind of work. Next piece is called... No, that's not the name of the next piece. That was me drinking a glass of water. Or drinking from a glass of water. Drinking a glass that is somewhat negatively or positively invisibly filled with something very much like water. Enjoying the visibility and invisibility that one attains through Zoom. Like right now, I'm holding a glass of, it's not even a glass, it's a jar. What is the relationship between words and the things that they purport to name or describe? The name, such as it is, of this current dream wrap is the question. It was a cube of chocolate chip cookie dough. The questions always began like this. It was a cube of chocolate chip cookie dough, edible, the baking kind. The story varies. It was the end of the world. Others said it was cherry vanilla. Some said both. Some said one cube. Some said many. Some said it was the confection of the culture through which it was traveling. Some said it contained magic. Others called it really trippy. I don't know, man. I don't know how this happened. I was just looking for some weeds, that's all. And I met this guy outside some trippy coffee house, and I thought, man, he might be able to get me some weeds. Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you?
Doing well. Beautiful evening.
I suppose it is the end of the world, you know.
True. How you been keeping busy?
Well, I've got this plan, you see. I'm going to teach a class on the Netflix. I got this friend who takes pictures for them.
Oh, you mean for that TV channel? You're going to have a show?
No, man. I'm going to teach a class on the Netflix.
Oh, that's cool, man. Say, you got some weeds?
Nah, man, I take these pills, and my doctor,
and he talked on and on, telling me every last detail of his medical situation, until I felt myself melting into the sidewalk with his trials, and his tribulations, and his weedlessness, and soon I find myself inside the cenacle.
What, you say? The Cenacle, that literary magazine with all of them highfalutin writers and authors and artistes and so on.
I was in it. Me, yours truly, me and my team, some of whom were not contributors. They're not authors or writers or artistes at all, but we're there to help capture someone who has infiltrated. And we roam the pages of the Cenacle through many writings by authors and many photographs by artistes and other strange occurrences within these pages, which are hard to tell about until we find the infiltrator. And wouldn't you know it, he's got some weeds. He's sitting at the very back of the Cenacle, right past the advertisement for Spirit Plants Radio America, between the notes on contributors and the last yawp, I believe. He's found himself a nice cozy spot. Hasn't been edited yet, obviously. Comfortable among the weeds. Me and my team sit down with him. Takes him a while, but he passes around his jive. Finally, I say to him,
After several good rounds going around, puff, puff, pass, puff, puff, pass. Say, man, what are you doing here?
Here? Where?
The cenacle, that is, among these authors and writers and artistes and so on. What are you doing here? Why did you infiltrate the cenacle?
Well, he takes a long hit on his short jive. We'd smoked it on down. He says, I gotta tell you, man, they talks about drugs a lot, and I got interested. About other weird stuff, too, like endless deserts and attics and so on. And I started, you know, crawling along down low, and I kept going. Some of it was too over my head. Some of it was just too strange. I kept looking, finally come back here, and here's this jive sitting here among all these lovely weeds. So I sat down and started smoking it. And then all you folks came. Well, why did you infiltrate? Like everybody else in the world, man. The end of the world, man. What do you want, man? His voice keeps changing as he gets more excited. What do you want, man? What do you want, man? What do you want, man? Me and my team, we stand up and move on. There's got to be more to know than this. Next dream rap is called Somewhere Down Deep. Somewhere down deep among pages, words, traveling time like space, space like time, words like space, space like words, in my wheelchair with its saddlebag, which has a Velcro strap, pardon me, which has a Velcro flap, it's not a strap. And that's no crap for easy use. You'd be amazed at how useful a Velcro flap on your saddlebag can be. When I arrived at that party, at that half-built old house, the one with that crazy bus poking halfway out of its attic, everyone's gathered around the long table made up of two braided planks, enjoying bowl after bowl of chicken and mashed potatoes, and a wonderful soup, too. People trying to forget their troubles. The crazy people with badges and guns. The sickness traveling the land. Talk of the end of the world, trying not to think about any of it. There was this old man, sharp, bearded, asking us hard questions to think about as we sat friendly together and enjoyed our meal. Is it good not to think about things in the world bigger than any of us? If only for a little while? Is that possible? Is that a good thing to do? Are you hurting anyone right now? Is anyone hurting you? If the answer is no, start there. You're at peace. You're at calm. Start there. Look at one another now. Ask these questions. Ask others when you leave here. Are you hurting anyone? Are you being hurt by anyone? If the answer is no, move on. One to the next, to the next, to the next. When you find someone who is hurting or being hurt, you stop, all you people who gathered here and are not being hurt and are not hurting anyone. And you gather around that person who is hurting or being hurt and you help. That's what you do. You don't add to the hurt, you help. You figure out what that means, what it means to help those who are hurting and those who are being hurt. There's no formula. There's no plan. There's just figuring out what helps. You arrive to it and it works, and that person is not hurting or being hurt. And you gather them into your number and move along. So said the old man at the table between the big bowls of mashed potatoes and the wonderful soup, and we all listened. We asked each other those questions. We listened. Maybe some were reassured for a while. Maybe our purpose as a beloved group and as single souls now cleared some. It's okay to be calm. It's okay not to be hurt. It's okay not to hurt.
It's okay. It's okay. Then a breath, and another, a third, a smile, a nod. It's time to help. I'm just flipping through some pages here. This is really long, Raymond. This is like, goodly God. It's possible that I might still, let me see what goes. This one is called I Made It to the Other Side. I always find my, I made it to the other side. There's always more Raymond Soler than I can read, although I want to. I made it to the other side. It happened. Finally, I made it to the other side. I don't know how long it was. I don't know what kind of travel. I don't know what I was doing along the way. It was a shift, high in the air, like the old stories told about, unit of time, end of the world, and all that. I was come there as though I'd always been there, untended, unfettered, yet unable to leave. The hallways I passed through, they glowed and they were endless. There was something else too, a small something, a lavender trace of something that kept me along. It was like the softest whisper of strange music. I kept following it, and it's like I followed it in an arc over both miles and years. I followed it through that endless spaceship, and it let me get near, and I began to arrive, and it let me nearer still, and I knew I was almost there. It's like we meshed together for a moment, and all was well in a new way. I didn't know what it was, what I was, but I wanted to say thank you to that lavender trace of softest music, and I didn't know how. I don't think it really needed thanks, because I believe that strange music was made to get me through, and that music's happiness was when I made it to the other side. And I awoke, wet, jagged, half in, half out of a frothy fountain. The fountain? The one near the tangled gate? Was I back? No. I looked around. No gate, just a fountain. Many noises in the world around me that I couldn't understand. Music nearby, but no sign of anyone playing an instrument. No sign of that trace. And now my past, it was like it was behind a wall I couldn't see through or over. Who all had I once loved? All I had now was to stand and to look about me. And to try to wreck, R-E-C-K, how to make a path further along my way. Next one is called Enigmatic Events, Enigmatic Music, Enigmatic World. Enigmatic Events, Enigmatic Music, Enigmatic World. Well, that's what James Starsden famously says, him a kind of time traveler who could sometimes be found around Iconic Square. Dressed in his now equally famous shifting rainbow-colored suit, he'd sit by that frothy fountain in Iconic Square, and he would turn on the white-faced pink cat radio that he carried around sometimes. He'd tune in to Radio 36X with Commander Q on Spirit Plants Radio America. It almost sounds like Commander Q has traveled to the end of the world to pluck bits and pieces from here and there, foreign tongues, old vinyl 45s, guttural gossip at icy bus stops, dirty talk, pretty talk. The noise will braid and separate, evolve, crack wide, dive deep for the longest time, and yet stories will occur among all this seeming chaos. One lingered with James Starsden long after he had, with melancholy adieu, departed the frothy fountain in Iconic Square, which, when 'twas his time again to travel via that spaceship with the hallways so long you would arrive far thence and whence from where you'd begun. He sometimes called it, for lack of a formal name, Starship Attic. One time he came to me asking for a ton of my earth, wanting it for the valuable earthworms within, the medicines they will make to help the world heal from its sickness. And I helped him to write a moving prose piece with photographs for a magazine called The Cynical and a radio campaign on this very station you are tuned into. I hope you'll consider his offer and his plea. I certainly hope you will.
And James Starsden listened for a long while to these words, long after he left Iconic Square, and he mumbled once again the words for which he is so well known. Enigmatic events, enigmatic music, enigmatic world. Studied that pretty little stone he always kept so close to hand, wondering where his beloved and the little stick.
Good morning. It's me. Can you hear me?
You're listening to Nighttime Daydreams with DJ Kalan K on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on and then you tune in. And visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more, and more, and more.
Next dream rap is called Sooner or Later This Will Happen to You Too. And if you're just joining us, this is Raymond Solard's Dream Raps from the Cenacle, April 2021, 26th anniversary, issue number 115 of the Cenacle magazine. Sooner or later, this will happen to you too. I am working in a kind of, I'm kind of filled with trepidation and excitement to know what will happen to me. Sooner or later, this will happen to you too. I'm working in a kind of big room. Everyone has their workstation, rows and rows of them. I'm unsure, my task, worried. My lunch has attracted bugs. Boss comes over, looking around, sees the bugs, frowns. I promise to pack my lunch in plastic containers from now on. I say it again. He nods, losing interest. Then I look at him deeper with all the honesty in my heart and soul and say, I'll pack my lunch in plastic containers from now on. He nods again, now edging away. Sooner or later, this will happen to you too. It's a Friday again. Don't ask me how. Ride my bike to this little antique store run by my old teacher friend. He loves the two laughing little Buddhas. He loves his many vitamins. He used to be a Marine. And I come over to his antique store to help him record his radio show for Spirit Plants Radio America. Big band music, Glenn Miller, all that good stuff. We record his show on that old Dumont reel-to-reel tape player of his. Then we pop many vitamins, and he tells me stories of the travels of the two laughing little Buddhas, making folks laugh and laugh and laugh till they see God is an obvious truth, a simple one, woven into the beauty of things, and yet by no means the beginning or end of the answers people folks seek about the many worlds. Sooner or later, this will happen to you too. But his antique store is crowded this Friday, packed end to end, even at closing time. I find myself a good sit down in an old armchair I know of there in a shadowy corner. Reminds me fondly of that coffee house. Decide to have a nap till he's ready. Far out, nowhere, there's a little hut with a vast within. And as you approach the little hut, you become more hopeful, more and more hopeful, more and more and more hopeful than you've ever been ever. Tell me the why of it. Tell me the how of it. Do. Maybe when this happens to you too, sooner or later, you'll have it figured out better than I do. Next one is called Me Riding on My Bike Back to My Zombie Town Hovel. This story begins with me riding my bike back to my zombie town hovel from Eastern Donut Shop, where me and my notebooks and black pens and poly iPod would headquarter for a long stretch. I come around to a side street I've ridden down many, many times, and in the middle of the street, there's a guy standing there in full protective gear. He's stopped this weird-looking bus and is blocking up the road. Bus is blasting out loud music like this street has never heard. Has there been an apocalypse and I didn't hear about it? Is it the end of the world?
Suppose that's possible. I get deep into writing dream raps for the new issue of The Cenacle, and I don't hear much news going on. And most of the old gents and ladies down at the Eastern would rather drink their black coffees and study their dog racing forms. I try to swerve around all this, and I think I crash. Next thing I know, I'm coming to in a strange laboratory, sloppily tied to a chair as though someone forgot to finish or had other business to get to. I look out the window, and there's my bike parked right in front, locked to the back fender of this weird roofless bus. I don't know what this was about, but I don't like it. Time passes, no explanations, nobody does anything. There are no secret experiments on me. No pokings or proddings, no blood drawn, nothing. How is me sitting here waiting hours on end, helping the cause of science in curing the apocalypse? Finally, I get tired of waiting to be experimented upon. I see that someone left the laboratory window slightly open. I wiggle my sorry ass out of my loose ropes and then on through that window, free my bike, and I ride on back to my zombie town hovel like nobody's business, let me tell you. Lock the door, close the curtains, my Alice in Wonderland curtains, tight, and in the darkness of my hovel, I realize maybe why they wanted me. They wanted my voo-foo. I built it myself off them internets. You've heard of them internets? Well, my voo-foo is a tool that you can use to find something on them internets, or at least some good candidates if you have a mission of some kind. You enter into the tool up to 6 characteristics of a need, and it will lead you to a few good candidates. You can set filters by time, by distance, by worlds. I warn you, though, that if you ever borrow or steal my VooFoo or get one of your own built from them internets, it can occasionally be ornery. Has this cackle, funny as the world. I want to know what just happened, though, quite honestly. So I type in this VooFoo, zombie town and laboratory and apocalypse, figuring that will get me started somewhere. But all this confounded contraption will say to me, is it some kind of hint or clue? Is the following. All worlds braid. All worlds hmm. All worlds braid. All worlds hmm. I drift back onto my mattress, lay with the beloved VooFoo in my embrace, thinking that, you know, that laboratory doesn't matter. Doesn't matter at all. What I need to know about is all worlds braid, all worlds. Next one is called A Real Lockdown. Lots happens when there's a lockdown, a real lockdown. Not like it was back when it was a suggestion, a good idea, maybe something you'd want to do if you felt like it. No. Now we're all locked down for real. No cause of science cure for this end of the world, this apocalypse. I'm with my dear friend, the traveling troubadour. He's struggling. I understand. It's hard. He lost his job. He's struggling. He's staying in the spare room of his friend, the photographer. But that's not really going too well. I wish I had more room in my zombie town hovel. We're at a party. Well, we're not really at a party. We're at one of those, what are they called? Virtual parties. We each put on the helmet you project there. That's how it is for most of us at this party, but not all. There are some people really at the party, not just virtual, who are even more down than my dear friend because they decided they don't care. Really, honestly. And they're happy to accommodate the rest of us and be our entertainment, so long as they don't leave at the end of the night, however that happens. Now, this isn't a story that really happened. This is just what you'd call a parable, a warning. So you keep that in mind. This didn't really happen, but it could.
So the old people are milling around in the big open field of the party. The rest of us are there projecting, using our helmets. We're safe. We're all ready. We all ready our controls and our various weapons, and we begin to fire on the old people, mostly old people. Now, they're dressed well for dodging, for nimbly getting around. They're not in wheelchairs or leaning on walkers, not tonight. They all got their shots of hyperadrenaline before this began. They're going to go out strong. We fire and fire at them, and we miss them a lot. They hide behind large rocks, in stands of trees, shadows in the corner. They jeer, they shout, they weave wildly high and low. Some of them, they don't speak English anymore. They don't speak any language that you would know. They speak a sort of guttural tongue of despair. As we begin to clip them, make them stumble, and then shoot them down, their guttural tongue comes out wildly. They cry louder and louder and deeper and spittier. They roar. But the critical thing about this party game is that we don't want to shoot them down and kill them all at once. We want to spread it over the course of the night. We want to wound them, make them angry, make them shout in that guttural tongue, earn it. Someone hits the music button. It's not pretty music. It's loud, mean music. It's music for shooting down people in despair. They like it, rallies them more. Remember, they don't want to come out of this. They haven't felt alive in a long time. Lockdown has been going on for a long time, and they decided this is the way they're going to go out. Fuck the end of the world. My dear friend, the traveling troubadour, is shooting, but he's not really shooting. This isn't helping him. He doesn't want to kill anybody. He hasn't adjusted to this lockdown. He hasn't adjusted to survive. And the fact that because someone does, someone else doesn't. He doesn't understand that us shooting down these despairing old folks is part of how the world survives now. Puts down his gun and he walks away, takes off his helmet. I take one more shot, clip a blue-haired old woman's thigh. Old blood flares out. She roars in anger, full of life, full of her life ending, full of the anger at her life ending. And this lockdown, all of this, it's a roar of happiness and despair. And then I take off my helmet and I go and sit with my dear friend. I worry he's not going to make it. I worry he's going to end up in a field like that with other despairing people. And I worry that he's going to want me to take those final shots as he roars out the remainder of his despair. Next piece, Raymond Sollard, the Cenacle, Dream Wraps, is called The Strange Folk. Somehow I ended up in the desert with the strange folk. You know those strange folk. They look up in the skies. They look deep in the white woods. They feel in the sand along the beach of the wide, wide sea, because they're sure secrets are waiting there to be told. They've heard about these secrets and they go looking for them. They figure these secrets are going to explain everything. Everything I ever wanted to know. All my questions answered. The beginning and end of the world. I'm going to be happy because I'm going to find out what these secrets are for myself. And so they go looking high and low for traces forward, for traces toward what will reveal all. Stories of magical sticks and stones. You know these strange folk. So what happens is I end up out in the desert with some of these strange folk. Maybe I misunderstood when they offered me a ride. I don't know. But there's this large gathering of these strange folk, and they're telling each other stories about looking in the white woods and feeling in the sand of the wide, wide sea and looking in the skies. Then the ships overhead gather our attention. The strange folk are gape-mouthed. Oh, yes, they are. And they start running every which way. They don't know what it means when the answers actually appear before you. They were just words before. Strange books they read in bus stations,
and along the way to jobs where they would talk to other strange folk about this possible answer and that possible answer. But no, those are the spaceships up there. And I'm delighted because I dreamed of them, didn't go looking for them, didn't have to. I had a dream one magical night, and so I just lived along, not paying attention to all the crazy stories. And there they are. Strange folk are running panicked every which way in this desert, but I just stand there, point and smile. I point up high toward these spaceships, and I'm thinking, man, they're too far up there for me to have a little pleasant conversation with them. What do I do about this? So I finally think, well, maybe I should tend to the strange folk for a while. And so I do. I go grabbing the ragged shirt off of this one and the ill-fitting dress of that one and the half-put-on wig of another. I start to gather them together and I start to calm them down. Hmm, is what I do. And I get them to hmm with me. We eventually gather in a beloved group, hand to hand, even paw to paw. And we look up at the spaceship and we're calmer now. And now we can have some of that pleasant conversation among us all with the spaceship up there. Forget about the secrets. Forget about the stories, because this is what's happening now. Ha, it's going to be fun. The next piece is called Time Distortions Ensue. Time distortions ensue. That's what he said to me at the beginning of the weekend. The performance had begun on late Friday afternoon till sometime on Sunday, but hard to say when exactly. I played a small part at first, nothing really too noticeable or important to the story. I was in the background, yet always somewhere near to the main character of the performance. Him, intense, so intense, like a wild wire. That's what I thought, but disconnected from himself, too. Somewhere deep down, the wires within lay on the floor, inert. As the performance moved into Saturday, the girl we traveled with noticed me nearby, and I'd lost my fringy scarf. But there it was, partly hanging out of my tie-dyed book bag at my feet. There it was, no worries. I looked up at her to show her. But she was gone, like she'd been gone for hours. The main character looked at me and said, "Time distortions ensue." Come Saturday night, I'd become a kind of vigilante in the story, taking more of my place in the front of things. I was called different things by different people: Cynical, Betsy Bunny Pillow, Dreamwalker. No longer wild and wiry, inside or not, he just wasn't. He was calmer. He was starting to learn from me, leaning toward me, looking toward where I looked, trying to figure what I saw. We shared the little stick and stone jewel of the Gemini machine and learned that what we were doing is what we did best. It seemed so clear, and yet it pushed us along, down, deeper together. So I took him along on my dream walks, showed him how the many worlds braided together and where they did. That ancien coffee house, the tangled gate, the attic, other places. Showed him the little hut at the heart of the world where one can travel back to unitive time. I brought him deep into the white woods, into a clearing, and I looked at him and I told him to stand up straight. Now, brother. He did. I said, now draw a circle in the air and with me as you do. I'll draw one with you. And we're going to travel this new way now, and you're going to lead us again. And this is the way you're going to lead us. Now go ahead, do it. Then it got better. It got way better. All that weakness, all those wild wires, all that fading. Nah, he was coming out of it all, becoming the leader he was meant to be. Now knew how worlds braid, how people braid, how hearts braid. He knew it all. But now he also knew that he didn't have to lead as though following is a weakness. He didn't have to wield his power as though others needed to be found to kneel before it. He became calm. He became happy. On Sunday, when I was ready to move on, I knew he was going to be fine. Just to be sure of it, I took my fringy scarf out of my tie-dyed bag, knotted it, smiling around his neck, not a word, and departed. This piece is called Troubles on the Job. You know, I understand that everybody has his or her troubles on the job, but this was an especially challenging one of mine that I'll tell you about now. I was working on this document. That's what I do. I work on documents. I try to make them good, look good, feel good, fly through the air, swim into the seas without drowning. That's what I do. Now, the challenges began because someone had, right off the bat, decided to call this document The Man with the Diaper on the Butterfly Between His Legs. What kind of title was that for a document? This weren't no porno, but that was the title. They had all decided. In that big room, the glass walls, fancy phones, I wasn't there. Just got handed to me. Go ahead, do your thing, they urged. Put on your iPod headphones to that crazy radio station we know you hear and do your thing. This whole situation quickly became multidimensional. In fact, the harder I worked, the more I realized I was laboring in an endless loop of almost getting done and then not getting done, of almost getting done and then not getting done, of almost getting done and then not getting done. Getting so close, getting to that last page and then remembering something and going back to fix it. Then there was a link, and then there was a reference, and then there was a footnote, and then there was a citation, and then there was an image, and I kept getting to that last page, and then it would be something else. It was never the same thing, just an endlessly braiding loop. It had become multidimensional, I tell you. It was that kind of day. Finally, I decided I was done. I sent it off, put it in a big brown envelope, squeezed it into that pneumatic tube they call the chipmunk, or the monk for short, so it'd arise the many, many floors to somewhere at the top of that endlessly tall building in which I am labored, find its way. And then I sat back down at my desk in the corner under the air conditioner that drips, even in the wintertime. And I pulled, slyly smiling, from the bottom desk drawer, the manuscript that really concerned me, called Power. I read in it about the Great War and the king who travels from place to place and how time seems wrong to him. Seems to run backwards, effect and cause. He has traced in this way backwards through time from the end of the world itself, down these great sandstone steps to a seeming endless beach. Will he find his long lost beloved? I turn the page and there's only a couple of lines to read. They say, if you come to the King's Island and look out to the dark waters of the wide, wide sea, there is only one thing you need to worry on until the king returns from his travels. If you hear distant bells, he'll come, come, a calling. There are people near me now. I hurriedly put away my manuscript. One of them has that envelope, that awful document in his hands. Shake my head, if only to myself. That kind of day. Next piece by Raymond Soler, Dream Wraps. What is the forever dreaming? The question comes up, what is the forever dreaming? It's always asked. Are there braided places like veins that run through the heart of the world, through the heart of the many worlds, from the great tree to the lesser great trees to the many worlds? These questions are always asked. Someone's always wanting to know. Someone's always arriving, sometimes with a little pad of paper and a pencil. Sometimes it's some kind of weird gadget that doesn't look nearly as efficient or easy to use as a right typer. Usually, when the questions are asked, I'm sitting on my log, the one speckled by rainbow moss, and I'm assembling a big, beautiful book. I mean, that's what I'm doing. That's what I often do. remembrances of my photographic travels in the attic, on the bus with no roof, and back to unitive time itself. I kind of think the people who come here with their questions, they ask someone along the way, and that someone says, well, look for the guy sitting on the log assembling his big, beautiful book. He'll tell you. And then they come. Come on, man. You come all the way down here and you're asking me what all this means? You've brought good questions. Come on, think, man. Stand up. I don't want to sit with you. Stand up. Now raise your arms high. Out. Now breathe. Breathe. Don't just inhale. Breathe. Good. Now listen for a while. Listen. Now take a big sniff. Take a big, delicious sniff. Feel it all around you. Feel it touching you. Feel it in you. Feel yourself opening up to it, letting out to it. If you feel it, it feels you. Oh, it's gorgeous and beautiful. You want to see unitive time? I can't tell you if that'll work, but the hut's over there. If you can figure it out, you can go and get a little bit of your own answer for why there is something instead of nothing.
You're listening to Nighttime Daydreams with DJ Kalan K on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on and then you tune in and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more.
This next piece is called I Think Often About Narrative. I think often about narrative, about writing narrative, about what narrative is. What it means to tell a story, how to tell it well, how to tell it strange, what any of it means. Do you know what any of it means? I'm glad you're sitting here next to me, beloved, because otherwise I would just be talking to myself right now about narrative. Writing narrative in the past and in the future, how they link up, uncertain. But by golly, if you start compiling them, you might just see how they connect later. That's what you got to do. That's what I've been thinking about. That's the conclusion I've come to. You see, I was sitting in my zombie town hovel. It's down that street past the coffee house from here. Sometimes I take that weird-ass bus they run to get there. And there were creatures relaxed all around my floor everywhere, under hats and so on. You might not even know they were there. They get cold, they end up under hats. It helps a little. And it was peaceful. I was talking to someone about a strange narrative with a weird structure. I don't think I was talking to the creatures because they just stopped listening to me when I talked that way. They picked me up later on down the road, as it were, when I started talking about the great tree at the heart of the world. That raised them up. Some even came out from under their hats, sniffing. I said, in this weird narrative, I lived in a room that is one small part of the great tree, but I don't know how I got there. And it doesn't seem like a bad place to be as places to be go. I closed my eyes and I imagined cherry blossoms and lines of a poem about the end of the world scattered every which way around this room, inside this great tree, inside this weird narrative that I was telling. Maybe to the creatures in my zombie town hovel down the street, past the coffee house from here. I follow the cherry blossoms and the lines of the poem about the end of the world for a long time till they come to a great city. I'm sitting in a tall city building in the glass foyer at a glass table in a glass chair. And there's a drawing in front of me. It's a drawing of a peanut. My guitarist friend arrives and says to me with his own unique, crooked smile, "Where are you right now, Raymond? Are you here? Are you in the great tree? Are you in your zombie town hovel? Are you doing that radio show of yours on Spirit Plants Radio America? Where are you?" Well, I put my finger on chin because this is a good question, not a tricky question. Shouldn't have been anyway. But I looked up at my friend with that crooked smile of his own and said, in my mind, when it is best and clearest and brightest, there is a cackle o' phony everywhere, a cackle o' phony. And that's why I'm here and there 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 and there. That's how it is. Well, he hauled me up by my raggedy shirt, gave me a solid pat on my back and said, my friend, I'm going to take you to see your favorite movie. I know where it's playing, down an alley no one else knows. It'll be just us. And for a while, your cackle-o-phony will be silent in the seat next to yours. This piece by Raymond Sollard from the Cenacle, the visible and or invisible Cenacle. 26th anniversary issue number 115, April 2021, COVID days. Raymond Sollard, Dream Rats. This one is called The Gemini Machine. Well, it's not something you're going to encounter just anywhere or any time of day, but you might encounter it somewhere, sometime. What's the difference? Oh, I think there's a difference. You see, there's the Gemini Machine, rhymes with hegemony. A little branch clasping a pretty little stone jewel in its crook. Now, here's how it works, and maybe this will better explain why one way but not the other. Two people, one holds the little branch, one holds the stone jewel. They learn what they do best together, and then they do. They become more than one, more than two. On the day when I was lucky enough to encounter the Gemini Machine, my beloved and I were riding in our favorite crimson sedan, Sydney Grand Prix SE, kissing, flirting, playing the old-time rock and roll on the Spirit Plants Radio America. Sometimes I'm up front and she's in back. Sometimes we're both up front. Sometimes we're both in back. Sometimes my beloved is under a favorite electric blue blanket, smiling. Sometimes I'm with her. And all the time, I'm holding the branch and she's holding the stone jewel. Sometimes we switch off, but always one of our hands is holding one of our hands is holding the other, and our other two hands are holding each other. That's how it works. It's not just about kissing and flirting. It could be other things. It could be two scientists come together. They're brilliant geniuses, and with branch and stone jewel held, and other hands held, there comes the answer about the end of the world that they have sought so long. It could be two whose nations both make money off their war and rivalry. These two are tired of it, tired of using the word God interchangeably with money and business and profit ideology and so on. Them in the secret attic of a hotel room alone, maybe that strange no-tell someone, some tell of. The door locked, a blank piece of paper, a jar of ink, a pen, hands held, stone jewel, little branch, time to fill that blank page with peace. What do you think? Maybe it's coming your way. What will you do with the Gemini Machine? Who will you do it with? The Gemini Machine continued. My beloved and I embraced the Gemini Machine, kissing, flirting, stone jewel and little branch, and Sydney Grand Prix SE friendly departs us into a black and white scape, her radio still blasting the old-time rock and roll. We're now in a cloudy canvas, traveling, maybe by train, maybe creature friends close by, some of them like trains, faux show. I look out the window at the black and white scape, cloudy, look farther and farther, Gemini Machine deeper and deeper. What does kissing mean on its far ends? I'm watching, in my mind's eye, Remote Land, that cinematic beast, and its sequel, 3 inches of blood, and its variation, More Fun, playing in simultaneous mix out there in the black and white scape. Far edges of kissing, Gemini Machine, stone jewel, little twig, beloved. Wonderful, wonderful. The train speeds up, or does the train slow down, or does it do both? Hey, listen, man, don't you tell me the speed goes just one way or the other. I say no. I say you can go fast and slow at the same time. I felt it, man. Calm down, sir. I'm sorry, man. It was all comforting and calming until I thought about speed going fast or slow and having to choose. It's okay, sir. My beloved nods me too. Smiling gestures are Gemini machine by reminder. The train conductor is an old punker. I can see the mohawk under his train man's cap. He's got tattoos running high and low. Pretty ones, though, beautiful ones. One shows a kind of strange bus with no roof, careening over a black chasm. Another shows those rocking Ramones boys traveling in the far reaches of outer space with Mulroney the space pirate and his boon companion, Commander Cacklebird, in their famous space tugboat. Toot, toot. You are a canvas like the black and white canvas we are in, I say, calmer. He nods, appreciative, shows me his blank book of the tongue, hands me this book of the tongue, and says, read this, sir, it'll balance you out. All the beautiful, all the glorious, all the horrific, all the strange, all the subtle, and all the boring things will mix together in a beautiful soup at the bottom of your mind. Unitive soup. Ha! You won't worry about the end of the world no more. I say thank you, brother, after we've exchanged a long, long look. Thank you, brother. I lean my head on my beloved's shoulder, still Gemini machine between us, and I glance at that book written in the tongue, every page blank, every page beautiful, every page calming to the riled heart and the restless eye. Fast or slow? No. Calm. Tongue. Fast or slow? No. Calm. Tongue. Calm. Tongue. Calm. Calm. Who was that old punker train man? He's gone. The train is now murky, becoming roseate. Is it still moving on tracks? Or are we now in two old armchairs in a strange, rosy lit room? Calm. Tongue. Calm. 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 Next one is called In a Time of Plague and Protest. I suppose you could say that in a time of plague and protest, one needs to follow other paths of travel than the usual ones. My beloved and I are now traveling through Labyrinthine, a new fiction, the strange, endless book known by many and a few and hardly any, where there are places filled with many words, fewer words, and no words. We come to this place and that, and I would tell you what places these are and describe them in detail, but they were not important. We were looking for something, and the places in between were just footsteps along the way. We weren't there yet. Eventually, we found ourselves in a desert, flat, cracked, reaching far ahead of us, along a strange, endless road, and now this began to become a place that was a trace of somewhere, rather than just on the way to somewhere. There are a few stops on this endless road. We traveled along this endless, flat, cracked desert road, as one does in Labyrinthine, a new fiction. Not quite by foot, not quite by vehicle, but just along. There were a couple of stops along the way, not many. A coffee house, not like the one where we met, for fancy drinks, a little bit of air conditioning, some music not in your own mind, not mmmed by your own lips, but the general feeling in that place was, you get your fancy drink and you keep on traveling through. That's how this endless road through this flat, cracked desert was. Get your fancy drink and keep on traveling through. Not unfriendly, just not wishing to accommodate anyone for more than a little while. Okay, that's fine. Till we came to a beautiful perch at the very top of Labyrinthine, a new fiction, from which we could sit together side by side, holding hands, took out our Gemini machine, little branch, stone jewel, wondering, what else do we do so well but kiss? What else is there? Is there a number two? We look down on all the wild, trans-dimensional, crisscrossed lands of labyrinthine and Ufixian. Now I have a black pen, and she has a nifty little camera. Wild laughter. Next one is called Letters As. Letters as shapes, sounds, clumps, or words, meanings on sheet, meanings of sound, sentences, paragraphs, pages, handwritten varieties, fonts, various surfaces, in dreams, in mind, in space, underwater, burnt up. Creatures nearby sniff curiously. We awake. Oh, what just happened? It must be the laughter that's coming from the apartment floor below ours. It's that Sunny's House of Sunshine and Pizza Den. Sunny's House of Sunshine is in front. It's a kind of a horror house, but only very sorta. Some come to collect on pain caused them, others to compensate for pain they caused, usually one-on-one matchings, and talk and or sex. Nobody forced to do anything, but the rules are commitment and anonymity, whether giving or receiving. And this is it. You stay till you pay or are paid in full. Does it always work? Does anything? Can you return? Their motto is, the next time, it's on you. Is this always true? I don't know. I think they do their best, quite honestly. Who could ask them to do better? And so I am in bed, twined with my beloved, knowing that these strange thoughts in my head about language probably came from the happy noises jarring me awake, emanating from Sunny's House of Sunshine below. Now louder music, wild cacklings. It could be, maybe not, maybe it was something else. But, you know, when you live above such a place and you know that they're trying to do good in the world, not worrying its far ending, it makes you want to turn to your beloved in bed, if indeed you are with your beloved in bed, and say to her or him or them, but in this case her, you are a lovely soul. Never too early or late in the day to say so. I think we probably carried on from there. Next dream rap, Raymond Sollard. It's called When You Go Under the Covers. I followed the night's beast right on down, down deep, you know. What happens when I go under the covers, and then under the covers, covers, and then under the covers, 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 and so on, until that's what all I seemed to do. And then, without knowing, I was arrived. It seemed to get darker and worse, the silence where music does not go. I'd given away for disposal all of my little creature friends and notebooks. I don't know why, but 'twas darker and worse like this, down under the covers, covers, covers. Then I started to climb back because I panicked. Suddenly, these covers didn't matter, nor how many there were of them. Didn't matter if I could count the number or if I couldn't count the number. In a kind of slow, furious panic, I began to seek to get them all back. Felt like the end of the world, all beloved unbraiding. It involved reaching out farther than my hands could reach, towards skies that sucked like big hungry cheeks, climbing what I couldn't climb, buildings with an up and no down. But I kept going. I ended up on a truck, and my notebooks were lined one after the next on a shelf in the back of this truck. I didn't know if it's all of them, but it sure seems like a lot. I didn't know how many notebooks I have. Is that all of them? I didn't know. The truck pulled into a processing center behind a roofless bus blowing out black smoke. I hopped off the truck, half crazed, the last of the covers falling off me, and I looked for the guy in charge. I demanded them all. He nodded, for he knew what I'd seen. Been himself too down deep under the covers, covers, covers. I got them all. I got people to help me.
I got strangers that wouldn't talk to me on a daytime city street to help me. I got them all involved. This was going to be their satisfaction, too. And there's the white bunny. And there's the little pink-nosed bear with the red stripy hat. There's Perth, the purple furry dancing creature. And they knew how it was under the covers, covers, covers. They're not mad. They're happy to see me. My notebooks, they're unharmed. Got a black pen in my pocket, too, again. Beloved's smile to my open eyes. So when you find yourself slipping with the night's beast under the covers, one after the next, give a shout. Give a roar. Make noise. Use those sharp teeth of yours to grab onto that cover. Bite it. Bite through it. Bite through another. These aren't the friendly blankets you know and love so well. They don't care how far down you go. You got to bite and chew and claw your way back. And you can. You can. You can get it all back and more, whatever it means, whatever more is to you. You can get it all back, but you got to try. You got to do. You got to do. Next one is called If You Reach Back Deep in This Mythopoeia. Now, if you reach back deep in this mythopoeia, I mean, deep in this mythopoeia, deeper, deeper in this mythopoeia, there is unitive time, before clocks and calendars, before names and enemies, before ideologies and favorite football teams, there is unitive time. Was it good? Was it paradise? Was it Eden? Was it Valhalla? Was it heaven? Words? Now, I'm no expert, but I don't think it was any one or the other of these. I think of unitive time as being without the bifurcation of waking or sleeping, when each and all touched each and all. I think it was something other than paradise or anything like that, good or bad. It was more like where things began, like a canvas. When it's blank, nothing's been applied to it yet. Is the canvas good? Is the canvas bad? And then the canvas begins to build, strokes of the brush, or with unitive time, the wide, wide sea, somewhere above the great tree at the heart of the world, eventually the islands, the one woods. All of these filled in the canvas in different ways. All were part of one. Eventually the natural sounds, these natural things made, urged into being a kind of music, a kind of which traced through and braided all closer together. And then something in the cackled. Something in the wanted to play, and so cackled an imp. She was drawn up in a bucket of deep earth by a braided thread from the heart of the world to the beach of many worlds, where lives Abe, the ancient sea turtle. And the imp smiled, beloved of Abe. And the imp said, "Okay, where is she bound? What will it be like?" Now that's what you get to learn if you dig down deep enough in this mythopoeia. Deeper, 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 deeper. And this piece is called Nathan leaping ahead in the big book called The Cenacle, April 2021. And in a sense, it is always April 2021 in the attic of The Cenacle on the beach of the wide, wide sea. And this dream rap is called Once a Man Had Come to a Great City. Here's an old story for you, but it's one that feels fresh and new as well. Once a man had come to a great city to seek his fortune. He wanted to learn a good trade, but he had to leave behind his old war-torn land. The ending of one world for the beginning of the next, he became a citizen of his new home. At night, he dreamed sad dreams of his old home and would visit his beloved village and the white woods nearby. In these dreams, he was cheered by the company of a white bunny with mesmering eyes and a merry little cackling imp. He comforted his days in learning photography from a very able teacher and then teaching others too. As an old man, his adopted home now turned somewhat cruelly against immigrants, even those like himself who had lived there for so long. Sadly, he chose to return to the home of his youth. He returned to his little hut on the edge of his village. He was unpacking his suitcase
when he found his ballot for the upcoming election in the great city he had left. Now heartbroken that he would not be able to cast one more vote in his forsaken new land. Now unpacked, he sadly slept again in the bed of his youth, laying his ballot tenderly by his white-faced pink cat radio. In dreamland, he found himself with the white bunny and the merry little imp. He was young again and swift, and they traveled the white woods together. Many dreams like this until they left him, near to a strange box, alone in a clearing. The box had a message on it, which read, "Vote today." He dropped his ballot in this box and woke up, and the ballot on his bedside by his radio was gone. This dream rap is called The Photographer. I had traveled for a long time across the depth and the breadth of this magical island, its beautiful, endless white woods. I sometimes wondered about how can an island with a shore have a woods within of no discernible size? Once you enter, there's no far end. You come out where you came in, never the other side. I tried. It doesn't work. It's not how it works here. But I had my nifty little camera, which I had brought to photograph this island, thinking that this was a familiar task to me, with steps and tools I knew well. But I learned, no, that's not how it works here. And I struggled for a long time to take a picture of anything. It's not that my nifty little camera didn't work. I was sure it did. I was sure, too, that I had a very deep supply of film. I was sure of all this. I checked the film in my knapsack. Deep supply. I studied close the nifty little camera in my hands. Each part of it worked, and they all worked together. But I was stymied. I couldn't begin to embrace this beloved new home yet. It's like this. I wanted to take a picture of everything that I saw because it all seemed so related. And so taking a picture of one thing or another thing seemed the wrong move. And so I wandered for a long time, just looking and listening, sniffing, tasting, feeling around. And I must admit that I began to despair. I thought, well, I can always leave. After all, I've determined that I'll always end up going out the way I came in here. I tried it many times to come out somewhere else. I'd enter these white woods, travel would seem like hundreds of miles, not keeping or counting my direction. But I would always come out to the same stretch of beach where I had long ago arrived. Sometimes I couldn't even do that, which is the other thing that I have to explain. I couldn't leave at all, unless I intended to. See, the white woods will help you if you help yourself. But if you have no goal or destination, the white woods won't make one up for you. And when I intended to leave, I'd find myself on the beach, precisely where I'd arrived. Even this required intention. I despaired over all this until one day, as I had been long traveling through the white woods, marveling as I always did, from the moment I got up until the moment I slept, looking up at the stars, wondering if tonight they'd be white on black or black on white, wishing to take my first picture, not knowing if I ever would, I came upon something I never had before. I just needed a hint of where to begin. I came upon a tree with a small soup tureen attached to it. It had a ladle hooked below the tureen, safely out of the fray with a bowl and a spoon. I tipped back the lid of the tureen and I looked in and I sniffed, oh my gosh, the most beautiful soup anyone could ever have imagined. I'd never, never known the like. And I decided that this felt like a gift to any who would happen upon it. And so I slid out the bowl and I slid out the spoon and I tipped back the lid. And I used that ladle that was hanging down there to ladle me out some soup. I sat right there next to that tree, and I began to sip my beautiful soup. And I received what I needed most. I fell into a restful dream. In this restful dream, I followed instructions from someone or something which went like this. Close your eyes. Think of where you are now. Now think of the red bag tall before you. Think of your destination. Walk on through. Open your eyes. You're there. When I woke up vividly remembering that dream and its instructions, I cleaned off my soup bowl and spoon and everything, got them all back into place and ready for the next. Then I stood up and followed those instructions right there and then. My destination was the place where I could start taking pictures. I closed my eyes. I thought of where I was. I thought of the red bag. I thought of where I wanted to go. I walked on through and I arrived to the place where I would take my very first picture on that magical island, a place where many others cross and learn too. Ah, lovely. Next dream wrap is called My New Job. My new job is to document these white woods, to figure out how this is done. There is no manual for this, no guide, no instructions anyone hands you with pictures, easy to understand text. Still, job's a job, as they say. I'll take what I can get. Maybe I can get myself a nice hovel to live in and leave this attic I've been squatting in for so long. So I began my documenting by just wandering about, sniffing the cool air, enjoying the gray sky, wondering at the scatterings of leaves all about me, some of them damp, the patterns they seem to form high and low as though language, if I could but read it. Is this documenting? I'm not sure. After all, who's to say when you don't have a guide? Then it's like a trolley comes through, the kind you might see in the white woods, which is to say it's blue and pink. On the front, it says La Transit. Nothing like that roofless bus I usually have to catch. The driver is kind of blue and pink as well. Smiles me on board with a friendly wave of paw. Hello, passenger, the driver says heartily, urging me to take my seat, put on my seatbelt. Safety first, we merrily say to each other. Toot, toot, and then the trolley begins to head through the white woods on tracks that seem to pick up and lay down just in front of and behind itself. We arrive to a great city I feel like I once knew, underneath a vast highway. Feels like the whole world's down under here. Strange stores, strange food stands, people in costumes and headdresses. Very friendly, very friendly. I get dropped off in front of a movie theater. Ah, my second job. Not a theater, of course. So I realize I better hurry to it. I'm one of several cashiers at the Nada. Of course, the cash register only has a couple of buttons, and I get them wrong when I try to sell tickets to the few people who come. Line starts to form, but I can't sell them tickets because I don't know how. It gets worse and worse, and I think to myself, I can't do this. End of the world. Guess the attic will have to keep me a while longer. I walk out of the Nada Theater. I cry to the air and the gray skies around me. I can document, but I cannot sell movie tickets. Next one is called Arriving to a Round Muddy Driveway. Arriving to a round muddy driveway of that famous old house, we walk right up the steps and pass through the front door. Got to take off your shoes or boots, though. Can't bring all that muddiness on in. Got to buy a postcard, but there don't seem to be any for sale. What kind of famous house is this without a postcard for sale? Guess I don't know. Worse, I get lost from those with whom I came almost immediately. I guess I just picked the wrong hallway to go down in this famous old house. End up in some kind of attic. And before I can look left or right twice, I'm in a flat, cracked desert. But at least I'm not alone. I'm with others, but they don't seem as confused as me. And they look a little better dressed for the situation. Their heads and their bodies dressed in garb to cover up from the flat, cracked desert heat. I follow along with them for a while. We arrive to kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, a bubble cacophony is what we arrived to. I don't know how else to put it. It was a vast place of bubbles, and they were performing like it was one troupe or something, like it was a bubble cacophony carnival. And I don't know, maybe there was even a war, and there was music too, heavy, pounding, drumming music. Like to urge the bubbles to go wild in their play or their carnival or their war. It was hard to say what was going on. I'd like to think that bubbles don't go to war. What would be the point? Then I found the music was drawing me away, which is just as well, since I didn't think I could really do much for all of this except admire it, gape-mouthed. I was drawn away toward a curtain. It was a blue curtain, and I thought, oh,
Maybe behind that curtain is the way back to the front door or somewhere more interesting that I can understand. I was game for either. But see, behind that blue curtain was a red curtain. Okay, for some reason, I was still game. Sometimes you got to build up the drama, get everybody worked up and paying attention, as it were. And then there was a yellow curtain behind that one. And I thought, oh, wait a minute here. Is this like the bubbles back there? Are the curtains now doing something together? Maybe I'm missing the point again of all this, because then one curtain after the other opened, violet, red, orange, indigo. Suddenly I snapped to. What? Oh, I was on the phone. That's what happened. I'm on the phone for the job. But this guy who was supposed to be interviewing me was telling me about all his struggles. Sick family members, a hard time down deep under covers, lost his little branch and stone. I think I just drifted off for a moment. Strange long moment, I have to say. Bubble carnivals or wharves, lack of postcards and so on. Anyway, I agreed to meet him. We ended up at a coffee house nearby in this kind of shadowy corner. We both sit in these old armchairs, but they're looking in opposite directions. So he interviews me the entire time looking away from me, and I looking away from him in response. It was like we were secret agents or something. And I never did figure out if it was him or his company that was called Figa. But we're talking back and forth. And finally, he stands and smiles. And I don't even know how I knew it, since I wasn't looking at him directly. But he started walking off. And there was something else about him that made me think, wow, I scored a job, because he's headed right for the bathroom. What else would you do if you just had a satisfactory interview with someone and found someone you needed for a position? I follow him into the bathroom, and the bathroom is just the worst place you could possibly imagine. Only three sinks and one's out. Ceilings falling down, pipes are exposed. Well, I barely get my business done. And then when I come out of the bathroom and look around for my new employer, he is nowhere to be found. Another quick ending. And I still don't know to this day, was it him or was it his company that was called Figa? Two poem warning, two dream rap warning, two more to go. This one is called, I was reading a book called Power. One time, many turns ago, I was reading a book called Power about a professor who traveled long years and miles by the famous bus with no roof, arriving at last to a club with a stage that said, The Pink Floyd, high above it. And a crowd was gathered, and he felt like it all made sense now. All his long years and miles of traveling by the famous bus with no roof, with the questions he carried with him. It all made sense now. Unitive time, the trace, the attic, forever dreaming, end of the world, everything. I look up from my book, and there he is, sitting over there in an armchair in a shadowy corner of the Ancien coffee house. And I walk over and say, hello, I'm an admirer of your work. And he looks at me and he says, who are you? And I say, no one really, just an admirer of your work. I was reading in my book about you just now. I show him my book titled Power. He takes the book from me. He looks at the front cover and the back cover, and he reads a few pages within. Then he says, this isn't me. I never found who I was looking for. That's how I ended up here, with no answers to give to you. I'm sorry, you'll have to keep looking, and your readers will have to keep looking. That's all I can tell you. Go back to your own armchair. And so I did. And I resumed reading about the professor in Power, a real hero who did find his answers. And the last dream rap is called Season of Lights in a Very Strange Year. Season of Lights, in a very strange year, this spaceship has traveled unknown distance in time. Everything before the spaceship is ancient history, mythopoeia, rumor, wish. We live on this beloved spaceship traveling through space. It's a beautiful spaceship for one so old. It's still green in its heart and multicolored everywhere. Just think of how many colors there are in this beautiful spaceship. Fruits, leaves, seeds, water,
sky, clouds, its roof of stars. See how it all braids together. It could not be a better home to travel through the universe for so long. It's been a strange year. We arrived to the season of lights again. Many of us who were here for the last one, I guess you could say, are here in a different way this go around. They're part of the spaceship again. But many did not die old, and many of the old ones did not die well. Now, our best and brightest are starting to pass around medicines that will be shared all around the spaceship for better travels and better days. So a kind word and a touch of the heart for this spaceship and its many inhabitants, for all those moments when we are grateful down to our very bones, and all those many moments when we are not. Look up into the sky tonight and think to yourself, what a wonderful way to travel through the universe at amazing speeds on an amazing spaceship. None know the hand or paw that wrought, but whoever or whatever wrought this spaceship, this green and golden and rainbow-colored spaceship, thank you. We are the grateful trace of that which made us, and thank you, and thank you. And we will be grateful for the medicines that heal and protect our bodies, and we will try for the harder ones too, the medicines for our hearts and the medicines for our souls, grateful ever of this beautiful spaceship long traveling the universe. Thank you, and thank you, and thank you again.